Hi, I'm Mike Collins, and we'll get to Charlotte Talks podcast in just a few seconds. But first, it's fundraising time at WFAE, and I want to ask you for your financial support. We're providing this podcast free from fundraising breaks, other than this one. Won't you consider a financial donation in return? How about $5 a month? That would help pay for the server space for us to host this podcast. Plus, you'll get the Charlotte Adventure Map, full of fun things to do around town. Donate online at WFAE.org or call anytime. 704-549-9000. Hey, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting us. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Last month, we started something new, monthly conversations with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles, and today marks the second in that series. The mayor is back with us to talk about her first 3 months in office, the importance of keeping the Panthers in town, concerns that surfaced last week about attracting and retaining police, and the request by officers for a 15% pay raise. Plus, she shares more of her thoughts on convincing the GOP to bring their next presidential convention to the Queen City. Mayor Lyles, welcome back. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, everyone in Charlotte. It's good to be back.
Well, we're here on Facebook Live this morning. As usual, you can email us questions or comments at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. And if I can get the phones to work, you can call us at 704-926-9323. That's 926-WFAE. You've been in the job for 90 days. Are you exhausted yet?
I'm not exhausted. Sometimes I need a little bit more sleep, but every day I get up, and it's a great day to be mayor of Charlotte every day. I get the opportunity to go so many places and speak with so many people that I'm fortunate getting to know this city. I had a couple of goals to work with our leadership at our state level, and at the federal level, then that's happened. I had goals to begin talking to our business community. So later on today, I'll be at Siemens and taking a tour there. And so I'm continuing to go as many places as I can to hear what people are saying.
So you met with reporters this week, and when you got to economic development, at the top of the list, I'm told, was keeping the Panthers. Talk about the importance of having the team here and keeping the team.
You know, I talk about this in the context of business retention. We want to keep the businesses that are in Charlotte here. We want them to know that we want them to grow. So for the Panthers, I think it's important to recognize the amount of state taxes that they pay, the amount of our tourism dollars that are achieved as a result of them being here. But even after that, Mike, I think about the character that they bring. I've been to Cam Newton's camp for kids. I've seen the work that Thomas Davis does. I mean, Luke, of course, everyone admires. And even just this week in the headlines, Here we have a Panther star reaching out and helping to save someone's life. That kind of activity and endeavors by the team members are, you know, you can't measure that value.
So what? We don't know who the new owner is yet.
We do not know.
What kind of conversations are you having with other people in the city, in the county, et cetera, business people, politicians, about keeping them, and what can be done before we know who the owner is?
It's interesting. You can't do anything until the owner is known. And people say, well, that's going to come quickly. Well, yes, there's a time to the Panthers' decision-making process because it has to mesh with the NFL's process. The biggest question that I get is everyone saying, well, can we keep them? And I am very much in the camp to say, we're going to do what we can do, but we'll let the community know, and we'll have that discussion.
That was my next question. We don't know who the new owner is, and we don't know what the new owner wants, if anything.
But
we keep hearing talk of stadium. What is the city? What is the county? If you've had conversations with county leaders, what are you willing to do?
I'm not going to speculate on what I'm willing to do because this is a community decision. It has to be grounded in our principles around business retention and economic development. So no speculation on my part. I'm just not going to do it.
Okay. You're going to make my job tough, aren't you? Aren't you?
Well, you know,
sometimes. This is called Mike and the Mayor. You're supposed to be my friend here. All right. Well. Jerry Richardson has said that he will do everything to keep the Panthers here. NFL owners have come out and said Charlotte needs to be the place the Panthers play. Charlotte's a great market because of its growth potential, because of its the development, because of its ranking as a TV marketplace and being the biggest city between the Redskins and the Falcons, Washington and Atlanta. What does that tell you?
That says
does that help you in negotiations?
It does help. Well, we're not negotiating. That's something Mr. Richardson.
Down the road.
But down the road, I think the biggest benefit that we have is we built a stadium that sells out for every game. Mm-hmm. Now, you may not see everybody in the seats, but the PSL process that we implemented to build that stadium is certainly, I think, a huge economic benefit to any owner.
So we've talked and heard talk many times of all the intangible benefits of having anything like this here, whether it's the Democratic Convention or it's the Panthers or it's the Hornets or it's something else, the intangible thing, the idea that our city looks fabulous on television.
It does. Isn't it great? And Carolina blue skies are always a
just the glittering
great thing.
When
and
the games
the
are
skyline,
at night. So it does something for our image. It does something for our reputation. It puts us on a national stage. All of that is incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to measure. But speculate. You tell me. You just said you weren't going to speculate on anything. Speculate on what that does and what having that kind of exposure because of the team being here has done for Charlotte.
Well, you know, next year, I think about this, we're going to have the NBA All-Star Game, and we talk about glitter and glamour and celebrity. I think that event's going to be great. Then we're going to have the CIAA at the same time. They're going to be back next year. And then I think it's going to be followed by the ACC tournament. So next week, we're having the NCAA finals here. So I think that Charlotte clearly is a place where people can come and enjoy. We have growth in our hotel rooms. The restaurant scene since you and I have come to Charlotte, Oh, my gosh, it's miraculous. And the talented people. And then the bottom line for Charlotte is when you walk around the streets of Charlotte during these events, people smile and they speak to you. And they're glad that people are coming to our city. So we've got so much to offer that I'm always out and about. It's great.
You mentioned the CIAA tournament, which was here last week. It comes back again, as you said, next year, and I think it goes through 2020.
That's right.
You have said that you'd like to keep the CIAA tournament here beyond 2020. That'll be a renegotiation, I suppose, because you've said that they are absolutely, this is a quote, absolutely essential to our hospitality industry. Absolutely essential.
Well, I say that because you are familiar with the cycles of business in the hospitality industry. They come in late February and early March, when usually we don't have our amateur sports teams that come in the summer, and you don't have as much business coming in. So to have that kind of tournament fill our hospital, they didn't fill the hotel rooms, it's a good, that's what makes it essential. It's a part of a line of business that you can count on, and we've had a contract for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great to see that renewed so that we can continue that kind of economic?
I don't know if it's true or not, but there were stories in the Observer last week when the tournament was here that maybe the fans are tired of coming to Charlotte. Do we offer enough new stuff? Can any city offer enough, unless it's a New York City, offer enough new stuff to keep the fans interested in coming back?
Well, I think that the CIAA fans are fans of their universities. And the 12 institutions that are part of this tournament, I believe Charlotte serves very well. The events that we can put on, I think there's some tweaks. Always. Any organization's going to look at it. And I have a lot of confidence. Jackie Williams is a phenomenal commissioner. She is the highest ranking woman conference leader in this country. And I'm really excited about the idea that she will have to continue to build on it. So we'll look at it. Our CRVA leadership, Tom Murray, is going to be working with Jackie. They are the conference chairs. They are the people that put this event on. And they're going to work hard to do that.
So are you as mayor involved? Will you be involved in whatever negotiations take place to see if we can lure them back beyond 2020, or is that somebody else? Is it Tom Murray? Is it somebody else?
Tom Murray and Jackie Williams will do that. I'm going to be involved. I'm going to go to every event possible. I visited every suite of each president and chancellor on Friday night to tell them, we're glad you're here and we want you back. That's my job.
Wow. That's a job that I would not want to have.
Well, I mean to me, it's a great pleasure. We get to meet so many people. All the alums are there that really make a difference. And for me, I'm really glad when I get a chance to do that.
So our disappointment over not being included on Amazon's short list of cities to be their second North American headquarters is beginning to dissipate. So now we can look more dispassionately at their decision and at ourselves a little bit, too. What do you think being told no, you're not good enough? What has that taught us about ourselves?
Well, I think they told about 300 other places that we
that.
Really like.
But we don't
as
like
well.
Being told no.
Well,
you're
we don't like
enough.
Being told no, but I don't think being told no is the real question. The real question is, what do we do for the next person? What do we learn from it? And Charlotte does that. So what I took away from that is that we have to continue to build our technology workforce, our talent in that. So we need to bring more people in. But we've been talking with Central Piedmont, the new president. We've been talking with the chancellor at UNC Charlotte, Phil Dubois, and also our new superintendent. What can we do to make sure that we have the workforce that when we have the next opportunity, we're prepared to say we've shored this up in a way that technology companies, besides the financial technology which is here, but our broader market, how do we build on that?
We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about Amazon, not much, because we've talked to Amazon to death, but we're going to talk about Amazon. We're going to talk about CMPD staffing and pay and red light cameras, which seem to be on the docket as a possible making a comeback. And I know that you kind of like the idea of that. We'll talk about that and more. And Michael in Albemarle is holding on the phone. Michael, stick with us. We're coming back in just a few seconds here with more with the mayor on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Mayor Vi Lyles, the second of our now scheduled monthly meetings. It's on the calendar for the rest of the year, I hope. I believe it is. And you can reach us with your questions or comments through all the traditional ways, Facebook, Twitter, email at charlottetalks@wfae.org, while you could even call us at 704-926-WFAE. That's not the pledge drive number, but you could still call that number during the show, 704-926-9323 to talk to the mayor. I want to go back to the Panthers for just a second. Michael in Albemarle dropped away, but mm-hmm. Deborah on Facebook has asked a question. Do we have to offer a stadium? I hope any new owner for the Panthers would look to contribute to the city's growth rather than asking for huge incentives. Football sporting events are just entertainment and do not further education, housing, law enforcement, or mental health concerns of the city.
So I don't think that we have to offer anything. We don't know who the new owner is going to be and what they're going to ask for. But the NFL is a business, and they operate like a business, and there's certain revenue streams, there's certain requirements that's set by the national organization for each team, and we're going to look at that.
But Marriott is a business.
Marriott is a business, and we often talk about incentives to get businesses here. If you'll remember, before we had a downtown hotel, the Westin was a part of an incentive package. We provided that parking deck in some respects, and that was the launching point for a number of other opportunities for us that we didn't have to participate in. So in terms of entertainment, we've got the Hornets and the Panthers, and when you have a national audience in that area, we think that there are people that come here because that's on a list that they have for relocation of their businesses or growing their businesses. But I want to say this. Every organization, every private sector business contributes to our tax base. And in many respects, all of that money comes in, and we have to deal with the issues that the Facebook questioner asked about. And although all of those are important, the important thing for me is to look at how do we balance all of this, getting everything in. Why do people come here, and can we serve everyone that's here? And the issues that you talk about housing and education and health, all of those relate to what government does. And sometimes we have to help our businesses be successful so that we can do that and more.
The Panthers are the million-pound gorilla. There's no question about it. The city and the county both walked away from soccer. And the monetary contribution to soccer would have been, I would think, minuscule in comparison to what a football team might need to build a new stadium. So is there a breaking point? Is there a place at which the city and county would say, We just can't do this. We're not going to do this.
I expect every decision has a breaking point that you make. At some point, you have to decide, is this valuable enough for to stay at the table or to walk away? And that's something we don't know the answer to. But I want to go back to the idea, this is a retention issue, not a new business coming in. This is one where we have a stadium downtown, and it's on city-owned property leased to the Panthers for their game. So when we talk about this, it's a different aspect than recruitment when we're talking about retention, and retention of something that's been very successful for 20 years.
So let's go back to recruitment. Let's go back to Amazon for just a couple of seconds, because I asked you about what we learned about ourselves after being turned down. What do we need to do better? Next time to get or can we do anything better? Did we put our absolute best foot forward? I don't know if you know what was in the proposal. We don't. They won't tell us.
Well, let me put it this way. I look at this city as mayor as what do we put our best foot forward every day. So there are some things that we need to work on, and we've talked about that, building better opportunities for people create jobs so that when they create those jobs, we can say we have a pipeline of people to go to work. Housing continues to be challenging, both from the idea of development pressure as well as affordability. Then we also have the idea of how do we make sure that our neighborhoods are creating a place where people want to live. When a business comes here, the first thing that they ask, where will the employees live? And we've got to have price points of housing that allow for us to recruit lots of businesses. Personal commitment, Mike, can I just say
sure.
This, is that we need to be more inclusive in this community, and we need to build from our diversity to moving forward to inclusiveness where people all feel welcome at every walk of life, at every opportunity.
Well, they didn't cite housing as a reason. They cited the relative strength of our university as a research institution. The number of students enrolled at our various colleges was below the number that they wanted to see. The number of high quality tech talent available in the marketplace, they cited that as being low. They talked about a need for mass transit. I don't know if they commented on our transit versus Raleigh, because Raleigh's still on the list, and theirs is nothing compared to ours. But of all those things, and any that I may not have included because I couldn't think of them, which are the ones we can do something about or would be inclined to do something about?
I actually heard your conversation with the chancellor. He was on your show.
Right, this week.
And he talked a lot about the idea of where we need to continue to build our university system. And he talked about UNC Charlotte's growth and development and the opportunities that we have. The other cities have multiple universities with a lot more strength. What we need to focus on is helping the chancellor build out our university, continue to work hard at Central Piedmont, and continue to work in our educational system that's from K through 12. Those are the things that I think would make a difference. And that makes a difference not for Amazon. That makes a difference for people that live here.
I wanted to ask you about that comment because you said we can begin to work with our school system to address the issue of tech talent. And you meant CMS. Kids today are so tech savvy, and they've all got devices in their hands all the time. Is that the level we have to start at, or do we really need to encourage that, or do we need to push people into computer programs at the university and CPCC level?
Now, you know, I've got a city council with some new members that are much more fluent in the speak than I am. Mm-hmm. Tark Bakari continues to challenge me to work hard at what do we need to do, because it isn't just having a device and being a user. It is about creating the opportunities on that device for users. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that are going to be successful. So when we talk about fintech here and the efforts that Tark is working on with many others in this community about building those applications that will serve businesses as well as serve individuals. Those are the kinds of things. So it's coding, it's getting people very comfortable with the idea that you can create a business around automation and quality of customer service experience.
Mm-hmm. Last week, CMPD officers, I think they gathered at the city council meeting and took almost every seat in the chamber. They asked for a 15% pay raise. The ability for some officers to take their squad cars home at night, better health care for themselves, and the reinstatement of retiree insurance, among other things. And they asserted that it is becoming increasingly difficult to attract and to retain officers because our pay is not as good as other cities, including Raleigh. And as a result, they have said that officer morale is at the lowest it has ever been. What was your reaction? Maybe you knew this before that meeting, but what was your reaction when you heard it?
Well, my reaction, first of all, is that isn't it great that you can have that number of police officers come and speak as candidly as they spoke to the elected officials? That says a lot, because in other communities, police officers don't feel comfortable, or they have people that come and they quietly talk about these things. So, one, I thought that communicated a great level of trust in our community with CMPD. The police chief was there. Every member of the city manager staff, all of us are in this conversation together. Mm-hmm. That's a real plus for this community. And then the other thing that I know is that whenever we're dealing with compensation issues, we don't do this in a vacuum. The police department will have representatives that will work with the city manager. That's a very long list, and all of it's on the table, and we'll be hearing more about that in our budget discussions. I want to say that I think that we have one of the best police departments in the state, in this country. We are chosen in large part by our businesses because of the idea that we can create safe neighborhoods and have a place where businesses feel safe, because that's the number one issue here. So what I expect is that in the budget we'll have a robust discussion, but that discussion has to include the force.
But did you know about this? I mean, you were on city council prior to being mayor. Mm-hmm. Did council know that we're having trouble keeping and retaining officers?
Absolutely. We know the retention rate is about 10%. I compare police officers in some ways to many of the other very difficult jobs. You know, if you're in the nursing profession, the retention rate could be as high, or the loss of workers can be as high as 30%. When you're in a job at every day, you're putting yourself in jeopardy. You don't know what's going to happen. These are very stressful jobs. So, but out of our approximately 2,000 officers, we're probably at 10%. And we have got to do something that makes it more attractive for people to come in. The chief has instituted lateral entry, and that's something that seems to be working, but we're going to always try to manage keeping people on.
Well, they said that morale is the lowest it has ever been. How much of that has to do with money and the desire for a 15% pay raise and all the other perks that I mentioned a second ago versus what's going on with police around the country? Because police around the country are under a microscope, and they feel unsupported, and they feel like they have to second-guess themselves in many cases. How much of it is because of that? And that's not Charlotte-centric. That is a problem around the country.
I can't really speak to what I read the national trends, and I hear that. But more importantly, I go and interact with police officers every day, and it's a little bit like, well, there is the overall impression that is influenced nationally. But individually, when I meet with officers, they're very candid around shift assignments, things that we could do to make their jobs a little bit easier. Those are the kinds of ways we increase morale, and we build upon our relationship with our officers. I think Kerr Putney is the right chief for the job now. I think that he's going to work really hard with our city manager to make it possible to address those little things. You know, there are things that make your job, maybe it's just I have to park in a certain place, or I have to wear a certain, whatever. You know, those are the things that we need to say, how do we make it easier to work in Charlotte and CMPD?
Would a 15% pay raise bring us up to par or take us over what we need to be competitive with cities like Raleigh, which evidently do pay more?
Well, you know, this is a more complex than just 15%. It's where you are in your career path. Mm-hmm. It's where your rank is. All of these things are important decisions, and you can't just say, well, it's 15%. It may be appropriate in some places and not in others. So let's wait until we get our study back on compensation. Let's look at where our key points of rank are and how long does it take you to get there. All of these are things that we're going to do. The good thing about having good government in Charlotte is that we do it openly, we do it based on data and analysis, and we participate in a discussion with the people that it impacts.
Ultimately, when you get all these studies back about compensation, et cetera, How much do you think you'll be able to do? What would you be willing to do? And who will make the decision? Will this be a decision made by the city manager or CMPD or council or a combination of all?
It is a combination. First, you'll have the people that are on the force that work with the people to do the study. Then it will come before the city manager, the police chief, the city manager, and I am sure there'll be choices to be made. And the choices ultimately will be a recommendation from the city manager to the council, and the council will make the final decision on compensation, not just for police, but fire and every other employee. Last year, we took a big step. We said that if you were a city worker, that basically the people that deliver, you know, that dig our or clean out our storm drains, the people that collect our garbage, we said that we would make sure that they were at $15 an hour. And that was a big step to make a statement to our employees that we care about being an employer of choice. We want to do the same thing with all of our employees, and police officers an important part of it.
Polly on Twitter writes, lateral entry doesn't help officers who have topped out on salary 15 years
ago. That's true, she's right.
Current officers are working so much off-duty that most are sleep-deprived, and the families are suffering from partners never being home. Quality of life is non-existent. She sounds like a police officer or a police officer's spouse.
But I think the most important thing that she says is that we have to have a quality of life for our officers, and that's what we're trying to address.
Okay. Guns have been a topic of conversation around the country because of the high school shooting in Lakeland, Florida. Former mayoral candidate Edwin Peacock sent me a question, which he intended to be asked at public conversation we had a couple of weeks ago with you and the police chief and the city manager and the district attorney. But it's a good question for you, so let me ask it for you now. He says, when, not if, Charlotte has a school shooting, the story will instantly become a global one. School security is primarily handled by CMS and their law enforcement professionals, not CMPD. CMS is assuring the public, we're ready and we're in control. Yet when children are shot, it instantly becomes a city and a county issue. CMPD, SWAT, both city departments are called on. EMS, a function of the county, arrives at the scene with the Charlotte Fire Department from the city to save lives. That said, Mr. Peacock points out that 99.9% of people will believe that you and the city are strictly responsible, even though you are technically not. Still, you will be the one in the hot seat. You will be the focal point. You will be the mouthpiece. Are you collaborating with CMS and the county about how the city would handle the massive communications tidal wave which would hit us during that type of tragedy?
Well, Edwin, that's a great comment. So I'm going to say, yes, we do coordinate. Yes, we work and train, and we're always improving. You've seen who stands at that podium when these horrific events occur. And I've spoken actually with the mayor of Las Vegas and talked to her about what's done. I actually talked with Edwin about this. We as a community have to recognize that we need to be prepared. We're working on a number of issues, the support of the council, doing this, preparing our private sector partners. We're going to be in a place that we are always improving and always paying attention to the safety of our children. The entire community cares about our children, and it's not going to matter who's at the podium. It matters that we're doing the work with the people that do this every day, our police officers, firefighters.
When we come back with Mayor Vi Lyles, will red light cameras make a comeback? It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins in our Spirit Square studio with Mayor Vi Lyles, our second of our regularly scheduled monthly meetings where we talk about all things Charlotte and all of the things on her plate. And one of the things that has come up again at a recent city council meeting, City Manager Marcus Jones said that he does not recommend bringing back red light cameras, even though studies have shown that they improve safety. I don't know that he explained his reasoning at that night. What brought up red light cameras in the first place? I thought we were done with them.
Well, you know what brought up red light cameras were the pedestrian accidents and losses of life we had last year. When we talk,
but are
about
they due to
this,
red light cameras or people on their phones looking at their screens as they cross?
Now,
the
you know,
streets?
I can't say this, but I actually went out and went to several intersections and counted the number of cars that would take a red light. So I do think people run red lights in the city. I don't know whether or not cameras are the answer. So as you can imagine, Marcus Jones and I really get along well, but I have to say this was when I went in and I said, Marcus, what's going on here? Because what we need to do is look, we have a new plan called Vision Zero. And that's zero losses from traffic, zero fatalities. That's what we're trying to achieve. And there are many tools in the toolbox, and red light cameras is one of them. So after a little bit of discussion, the city manager is going to come back in a few weeks, and he's going to talk about all of those tools.
And we'll is he going to explain why he's not recommending them?
I think he's going to tell us why he thinks red light cameras are not the first on the list.
Okay, because we had these before, and I know that you don't agree with his recommendation, because as a city council member, asked for the return of these red light cameras. We had them from 98 to 2006. How effective were they in terms of reducing the number of accidents and as a revenue stream?
Well, you know, we did not collect revenue from those.
Which is why we don't have them.
Which is why we don't have them.
Right.
Because all of those revenues went to the school system. But other communities have worked out arrangements through with their school systems so that the cost is covered and any fines
goes further. Let's back up.
Okay, back up.
Because the Court of Appeals, the North Carolina Court of Appeals, decided that 90% of the revenue from the use of these cameras had to be given to the local board of education.
That's right.
Those cameras were in place, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, prior to that decision, correct?
Yes.
So where did the revenue for those cameras go prior to that decision?
So you're going to get some inside baseball here. We actually put them in an account to save the money in case the court decided that the money had to go to the school system, and we did that.
Okay. So when the court decided the money had to go to the school system, the city could no longer afford to pay the company in Florida that operated the cameras and put the cameras up. They were their cameras.
That's right.
We couldn't afford, so we had them take them down.
That's right. You're right.
So did the court understand that that was going to be the outcome of that? Was that decision strictly for Charlotte, or is it a statewide decision?
It was a statewide decision.
So did they understand that? Did they care about
that? I don't know whether they understood it or not, but the law is the law, and we follow that. I mean, we're a country of laws, and we—
So how would we bring them back?
We would have to have an agreement that would be approved by both the state legislature and the school system. So it's not an easy thing. It's not like snap your fingers and put cameras up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is some discussion about whether they're effective, whether or not they cause rear collisions. So what I want to say clearly, my point is, it's one of the tools we ought to use. I'm not saying that I want red light cameras without knowing what it's going to accomplish. And what I've said to the city managers, tell us how it works. If it's effective, how could we do it? And if it's not effective, tell us what is, so that we can make our city safer for walking in our neighborhoods and along our
because
streets.
Because one of the criticisms when we had those cameras was that they were causing rear-end collisions,
exactly,
because people were afraid of running the light because they'd be caught on camera and they would get a fine in the mail, so they would jam on their brakes and then somebody would hit them in the rear.
That says a lot about how fast we drive, doesn't it?
Well, I have a theory about that.
What's your theory?
We put up impediments at every opportunity that we have for traffic flow. Every time we can possibly slow traffic down, or we can put not time the lights, or don't widen the streets. And so when you have an opportunity to go in Charlotte, you go. And that's the problem. I don't know how you fix that. That's my theory. Robert on Facebook, you don't need red light cameras. It's about safety and not money. Increase the time between red and green by 2 seconds.
Well, I will certainly ask the traffic engineers to take a look at that. I don't know enough about it. I'm not a traffic engineer. So we're going to send that suggestion to our traffic engineer. And when the manager comes back, we'll ask, well, what happened if we do it by 2 seconds?
Okay. So we have, at long last, in Charlotte, a new planning director who hopes to completely rewrite the city's zoning codes by June of 2020, which really, when you think about it, is right around the corner. And he feels that the current rules, and many other people agree with him, are out of date, wonky, that's I think his word, and often inscrutable. But some council members don't want to move too fast on this because understanding the current rules and the proposed changes is highly complex. What's your take on all of this?
My take is that I hope that everyone will go online and look under the UDO website, that if you have a
special... What is UDO?
UDO is a Unified Development Ordinance. And that's what the idea of
And what
of
is the UDO website?
That means that is on the city's website. You can just Google or Bing or whatever instrument you use to look up things on the internet. So look at that. But we're having a public summit on March the 24th, and you can come to that and learn more about it. So when you rewrite the use of land or make land use decisions universally, it does take a long time because we're talking about, 300 square miles of the city, and you start thinking about it hadn't been done since the late 80s, and we've been doing it just gradually, case, someone would bring up something. So we have TOD, we have pedestrian overlay districts, we have historic districts. All of that is out there, but they're one-offs. So when you take those one-offs and you put them all together, is that building the kind of city that we want to have? So land use is absolutely key. And to look at it in the day that we have the ability to have analytics, to have best practices that are working in other communities, we ought to try to do this. And it takes time. It takes a lot of public comment. I'm not surprised. I was one of the people that said, sometimes I don't understand what we're saying and talking about. So go slow to go fast. Make sure that people understand what we're saying. Let's do incremental decision making, not do one big aha at the end. Here it is, up or down. You've got to get buy-in every along the way.
And you've said that you have to be, city council members and you, the mayor, have to be able to explain what this thing is, what's going on, how we're going to do it, et cetera. If you don't understand it, you can't explain it. And how can you expect anybody else out there to understand it and buy into it?
I expect that there are some people that understand it better than we can articulate what it means. And if we can't articulate it, if we can't speak plainly about it, so that people that are coming here and asking us, can we build this or can we do this, if we can't say yes or no or why, then we would not be successful.
But was he not charged, the new planning director, whose name I cannot pronounce? You can do it, though.
Taiwo, and I'm going to not do it very well, so we're just going to call him our new planning director as well. But he comes from a place of knowledge and skill, Jaiwobi. I'm not going to say that correctly. So, but I want to just say this, that this is going to be a major effort. And it's not just an effort to do what's right. It's the ability to communicate why we're doing it and what it achieves. And that's what we're charging with. So I think Councilmember Winston actually said, we need to make sure that we have communication about it. And I agree. And communication means it goes both ways. People understand it.
But was he brought here to do that? Was that one of the things that we wanted to have done when we hired a planning director?
I think
after all
that
these years
and more.
Of not having one?
That and more. You know, planning is essential to economic development. Economic development is essential to jobs. And all of this fits together.
Okay, you and I will have class about how to pronounce his name in the next few weeks.
Because, sorry, Taiwo.
Because he will be on this program on March 22nd. And by then, I must have mastered that, okay?
Thank you.
You'll have to help me out here. You were recently at the White House to meet with President Trump as he unveiled his infrastructure plan. What did you think of that plan?
I think we're going to be challenged by it. I'm not quite sure how the reception's going to go in Congress. I also think that what the president is committing to do is helping us with permitting processes. You know, studies about environment, the studies about water and impact, all of those kinds of things. He's saying, let's take a look at that and can we make it drive that decision-making more to the state and the local level so that you can build faster instead of having to extend the time for construction.
Because he talked a lot about infrastructure on the campaign trail, both as a matter of pride, because our infrastructure is crumbling, and as a jobs creator. And even people who maybe were not fans of President Trump, I think, could buy into the fact that we have antiquated airports, crumbling bridges and highways, and we need new infrastructure. We haven't put any money into it in years. But the plan tops out at $1.5 trillion and calls for only $200 billion in new federal spending. The rest would have to come from state and local governments and private companies. Is that what people thought he was talking about when he was campaigning, and is that even possible? Can states and local governments come up with that kind of money? It's $1.5 trillion.
So I can't speak to what the president's thought or what the voters thought at the time, but I think we're dealing with something that he has proposed that goes to Congress, and I would encourage people to work with their congressional delegations to speak up on this issue, because the funding for it is very small percentage of federal funding actually coming to local government. So what he's saying is, I'm going to let you move faster so you can save money, but if you have no money, you can't save it. So we've got some issues around this. What this bill essentially, or the president's idea, it's not a bill yet. What this president is saying is that he believes that the private sector, through public-private partnerships, can build infrastructure for the government. That's quite a significant change in direction and philosophy.
That's a whole other conversation. That's a whole other show. So we'll move on to the Republican National Convention. Charlotte had great success and received glowing reviews in 2008 when we hosted the Democratic National Convention here. And you want to bring the GOP to convention to town in 2020. Given that we're a sea of blue in a purple state, what are our chances of being chosen?
I think that we're going to put forth our best effort. I think that we've got the advantage of having a convention in 2012. We know what it involves. We know what it requires. And I think that's a strength. But there are going to be other communities, other cities applying, and I don't know who they are. But we will hopefully compete very well.
Jared on Twitter, and this is obviously not Jared Kushner, asks, why would we give the RNC a place to congregate in 2020? Because it brings in money? Nah, that's the money we can pass on.
Well, you know, I think that it doesn't bring in money. It brings in jobs. And that's a big difference. When we're talking about the hospitality industry, 1 in 9 people in the city are employed in that industry. And if we can do something that helps those communities, then we should.
We're bigger than we were in 2008. We have more to offer than we had in 2008. Are we better equipped and better ready? Are we more ready today than we would have been all that time ago?
The answer is yes.
Okay. Today is International Women's Day, and I understand in the next 30 seconds, we only have 30 seconds left, that you have proclaimed this also Charlotte Women's Day.
That's right. I just think about this. You know, I go back to the days of Shirley Chisholm and Angela Davis, but I think about the women in Charlotte, Betty Chafin Rash, Cindy Patterson, Sarah Stevenson, and the people that serve today with us. I'm really proud that we have leadership of the past, current, and the future. So I'm thinking about Colette Forrest and Natalia Diaz and Aisha Dew, Tracy Montrose, Pam Whiteman. All of these women are fabulous.
Okay. Mayor Vi Lyles, I'll see you again next month.
See you next month, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much for the hour.
Thank you.